Good afternoon. I'd like to call this meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee to order at 1:33 p.m. We are in Belt's Room 105 of the Thomas Stewart Building in the nation's most beautiful capital city of Juneau, Alaska. Today is Monday, February 26th, 2024. Members present are Senator Merrick, Senator Bishop, Senator Ray Jackson, Senator Dunbar, and myself. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off or silence your cell phones. I'd like to recognize and welcome our recording secretary, Lisa Denny, and our LAO moderator, David Monroe. Today we have three items on our agenda. First up is Senate Bill 144, Rates for Motor Vehicle Warranty Work. Senate Bill 204 follows Certificate of Fitness for Plumbers and Electricians. We'll wrap up today with Senate Bill 228, extending the Board of Massage Therapists. First up today is Senate Bill 144. We first heard this bill on February 19th when we had a presentation of the bill and took invited testimony as well as public testimony. Today we have the bill's sponsor, Senator Klayman, and his staff, Carly Dennis, here to give a brief recap of the bill and answer any questions that have come up. Senator Klayman. Ms. Dennis, if you could come forward, state your name for the record, and begin your recap of the bill. Welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Actually, Mr. Chairman, we were just here to answer questions. We didn't bring in an additional presentation other than what we heard on Friday.
Oh, no problem at all. Well, thanks for being here. Are there any questions for Senator Klayman and his staff? Could you just briefly let us know and remind us what your bill does, Senator Klayman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What the bill does is it means that for warranty service, the dealers would bill the same rate they would do, bill the same time allowance that would be used for non-warranty service for the same work. And the reason for the legislation is that the auto dealers are having, in terms of the workplace, challenges that are really statewide and nationwide in terms of retaining and recruiting employees to do this essential work, is that the differing time allowances actually makes it very difficult to keep and employ mechanics in Alaska for dealers. And so it's basically a marketplace. It's an effort to equalize the marketplace.
Very good. Also online for questions is Les Nichols with the Alaska Auto Dealers Association. Is there any questions from committee members for the bill sponsor or Ms. Nichols? Thank you very much, Senator Klayman. At this time, I will reopen public testimony on Senate Bill 144. We will not be allowing testimony from the public again if folks have testified before. So if there are folks online who have already testified, out of respect to everyone, just offer one opportunity to testify per person. But if you do have written comments that you'd like to submit to the committee, you can send us an email at slac@akleg.gov, and we'll be happy to read your email and enter that into the record as well. So open public testimony on Senate Bill 144. Is there anyone online or in the room who would like to testify on Senate Bill 144 that has not testified already? Jeff Perry.
Yes, sir.
Please state your name and affiliation and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jeff Perry. I'm with General Motors Corporation. I'm here today to speak in opposition of Senate Bill 144. Prior to this hearing, we were asked to randomly sample 25 labor operations to compare OEM times to aftermarket times. And what we found does not support the argument that OEM repair times are insufficient for technicians to complete their warranty repairs. In our sample that we selected labor operations from actual warranty repair orders submitted by our dealers, and from that selection of repair orders, we found that the technicians had recorded actual repair times that were less than the OEM published time in over 50% of the cases. Interestingly, the technicians also recorded times that beat the aftermarket time allowances in just over 50% of the cases as well. And if anything, the data that in these repair orders demonstrates that the underlying issue in Senate Bill 144 is not about whether OEMs allow enough time for warranty repairs, but rather is simply about wanting more for the sake of getting more. What is certain is that in every case where the technician does need more time for a specified labor operation, only the OEM has a process to allow the dealer to submit for that additional time. And in 2023, GM approved 97% of all requests for additional time for Alaska dealers. While GM goes to great efforts to accurately measure the time needed for each labor operation, the same cannot be said for the aftermarket time guides. Their book is a product, and their customer is the dealer or the repair shop. They compete based on who publishes the highest prices, and in fact, it's not uncommon for repair shops to have multiple aftermarket time books so that they can cherry-pick the highest time for a particular repair when charging their customers. Aftermarket labor time guide publishers provide disclaimers for their product that their times are guides for estimating only and are not intended for billing consumers. In fact, the Alaska Automobile Repair Act specifically requires that repair shops provide customers with a final invoice that details the costs of parts and labor involved in the repair, and it further prohibits misrepresenting the cost of repairs or attempting to collect for repairs that have not been made. Charging a customer for 2 hours of labor when only 1 hour was actually involved in the repairing of the vehicle misrepresents both the quoted hourly labor rate and the labor time involved in completing the repair. And the state of Alaska should not be endorsing these practices. For these reasons, we oppose Senate Bill 144, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else in the room or online who has not yet testified to Senate Bill 144? Seeing no one, this time I will close public testimony on Senate Bill 144. Is there further committee discussion? Seeing none, what are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 144, version 33-Lima Sierra 0736/Alpha from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Is there a further objection? Seeing and hearing none, Senate Bill 144 moves from the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. Back on the record, it's 1:42 back here in Belts Room 105 of the Thomas Stewart Building. Next up is Senate Bill 204, Certificate of Fitness for Plumbers and Electricians. We have with us today Commissioner Designee Kathy Munoz for opening comments on the bill. Commissioner Designee, welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce.
Thank you, Chair Bjorkman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kathy Munoz, Commissioner Designee for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Today, I will make introductory remarks on SB 204, and then I will be followed by the Chief of Mechanical Inspection, Scott Domero, who will give a presentation on the Certificate of Fitness process. The legislation before you changes the trainee certificate of fitness from 2 years to 6 years. Currently, if a trainee fails to renew their certificate of fitness, which is required in law, the hours worked during that lapse cannot be counted toward their certification for their journeyman certification. This affects electricians and plumbers in their training. The legislation also increases the fee for a journeyman level certificate from $200 to $300. This is a fee that hasn't changed since 2006. The fee increase will partially cover the loss in revenue created by the changes in the trainee level certificate. The elimination of the requirement for trainees to apply for and pay for renewals during their training period will expedite the apprenticeship procedure overall, and will avoid the difficult situation of having to deny hours worked on a lapsed COF, a certificate of fitness. With me today is our Chief of Mechanical Inspection, Scott Domero, to walk you through the bill and to provide a presentation on the certificate of fitness program. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Commissioner Designee. Senator Bishop has a question for you.
I have a question for the Commissioner. You didn't do this in a vacuum by yourself, right? I mean, you had some input from maybe IBEW and the plumbers and pipe fitters. You just didn't dream this up by yourself. Is that correct?
That is correct, Chairman or Senator. Thank you.
Mr. Domero, please state your name and begin your presentation. Welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce.
Thank you, Chair. For the record, my name is Scott Domero. I'm the Chief of Mechanical Inspection for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Thank you for the opportunity to present this to the committee. This presentation is for review of our process, and I will move through it quickly. I welcome any questions during the presentation to clarify any of the information. Mechanical inspection performs licensing and field enforcement for plumbing and electrical code work. We provide inspections for boilers, unfired pressure vessels, and elevators. We issue certificates of operation for amusement rides and recreational devices. Additionally, we provide licensing services for boiler operators, asbestos abatement, hazardous paint, and explosive handlers. This legislation would propose the extended length of a trainee certificate of fitness to be 6 years, enough to cover their full apprenticeship program. The proposal would also include a fee increase for other plumbing and electrical trade licenses. The fee has not changed since 2006 and is required at this time to offset expected loss in receipt revenue from the extension of the trainee certificates. Trainees currently have a high number of lapse days. I refer to lapse as a period of time where the trainee license does not maintain a current certificate of fitness to perform code work. As code work is required to advance to the journey level in the trade, a lapsed license is a major setback in working towards advancement. Any lapse days, the trainee requires the trainee to rework that work. Essentially, when they are ready to journey out, or they think they are, we have to send them back to complete more hours before we can journey them up. This is a graph of licensing that we maintain active licenses for. As you can see, the yellow is electrical. The hash lines are electrical trainees. The blue is plumbing journeymen, and the blue hash line are the plumber trainees. New licenses issued. This does not include any renewals. This is simply a graph of new licenses issued over the past 5 years. So we are seeing an uptrend slightly in both the dark blue plumber and the dark yellow, the solid yellow electrical, but those are actually offset by the overall licenses. We are having more people leave the work then come into the work at this point. As an example, plumbing licenses alone, this is total, including renewals. Overall, we're losing people in the trade. Electrical licenses follow a similar trend. While we see a slight uptick in the number of trainees coming into the system, the overall impact is less journey-level workers to do projects in Alaska. These are the other licenses indicated on the first chart. These don't really impact what we're doing today, but I retained them in here for comprehensive data here. We see downtrends in most of the areas. The one where it's more expected is through asbestos abatement, where we would expect to see, because there is no asbestos being added, we are seeing a good downtrend. The rest of these are somewhat alarming. Trainee requirements for both plumbing and electrical are similar.
Senator Bishop has a question.
Yes, sir. Just before we move up. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
Director. Before we move off your slides that you brought us here, maybe I'm being picky, but so your acronyms, ET, electrician trainee, are those federal guidance, you know, at the department, from the department? Are these identifiers, or are these our own state identifiers?
So, through the chair, these are really our own identifiers. They match with federal. There is no federal guideline for these, but we match with the general federal requirements through the federal apprenticeship program.
Okay, so I just, you know, to me it's an electrician apprentice, you know, trainee slash apprentice.
So again, through the chair, to answer that, we don't do apprenticeship programs. Alaska is a federal managed apprenticeship state.
That's true.
So we issue a trainee card to do the training work, which goes in conjunction with the actual apprenticeship program.
That is true. And the other thing I'd like to just point out, maybe, and I'm not being picky, but we've been using the verbiage journey persons for years. Maybe we could switch that to journey persons.
I think that's a fantastic idea.
Thank you.
I'm just following with what's currently in the regulation.
I'm not picking it.
Absolutely.
Throwing it out there.
Favor doing that.
Senator Gray Jackson also has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I heard you say a couple of times that you're losing people. Do you know why? What's your speculation on why you're losing people? Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Through the chair, there are a lot of reasons for it. COVID has had an impact, a general distaste for the trades. I think that over the past several decades, we've very much encouraged college to the harm of the trades. And so people have been more apt to go into college, to leave the state, to look for other work, and the trades haven't been promoted as I feel they should be. There is no lack for training in the apprenticeship programs, either through the union or outside the union, and the work is out there. We know the work is out there. In fact, part of this is to avoid having to bring up outside Alaska work, bring up workers from Utah, Arizona, Texas, anywhere else, because then the money leaves Alaska. We're trying to keep enough tradespeople to do the projects we have, but the downtrend has been pretty consistent and through nothing that we can control that I've seen.
Right. May I follow up, Mr. Chairman? Thank you for your response. But a lot of these employees are state municipal employees, correct?
That would be included in here.
Okay.
Anyone who does either electrical code work or plumbing code work would be included in this.
Right. Can I follow up again, Mr.
Yes.
Chairman? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So do you think that not having a concrete retirement to look forward to in the future has anything to do with folks leaving?
I can't really speak to that. I'm not sure about the reasons that would be involved with retirement.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Damrow, please continue with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the requirements are similar for both plumbing and electrical journeymen. To become a journeyman, you have to have 8,000 legally obtained on-the-job hours. That may include 1,000 classroom hours. Hours get submitted through experience verification forms where the employer or the union that somebody works for signs off on those hours. They take a test. Once they get those hours, they take a test. A 70% score is required, and a $200 fee is required to get the certificate of fitness. Barriers towards getting this. We're seeking to remove hurdles for becoming a journeyman, not necessarily to make it easier to become a journeyman, but administrative hurdles are what we're looking for. These would involve upgrades to our IT infrastructure. The proposed legislation is one barrier that we're looking at, in that it seems unnecessary to force trainees to be renewing when there's no requirement for that renewal. The lapsed hours that the commissioner mentioned are significant. In the five-year period that we're discussing, 2019 to 2023, electrical trainees had 21,000 days of lapse time. In the plumbing field, it was 15,000 days. This is probably not complete. It's based on an estimate of our data. These are cards that were lapsed, like let expire, and then later renewed. And this is the calculation. It's fair to say that these people did work these hours illegally, and that these hours cannot be counted towards their journeyman level licensing. Renewal requirements for the two-year training certificate of fitness are currently you pay $200. There is no training level requirement. There's no other marker that we use to do this renewal. So the impact of the change, I feel, would have a significant impact on licensure. This would provide a simpler and cheaper process for trainees during their four-year apprenticeships. Most significantly, this provides a safety net where workers who currently would lapse their license and not work legal hours would not be able to lapse their license anymore. This six-year certificate proposal would cover the entire training program for over 99% of training apprentices in the fields. Therefore, no lapse days would be there. When they come in with 8,000 hours, unless we see another problem with those, we could certify all 8,000 hours for them and get them onto the journey level quickly. If we can remove other barriers, the plumbing and electrical trades will be a more desirable option for Alaskans, and we'll be better prepared to have local workers take advantage of new projects in the future. The proposed legislation would take effect on July 1st of 2024. We set this date to coincide with the new fiscal year, and we set it in the legislation that anyone who had a current card at that time, so essentially any trainee receiving their card within 2 years, would be able to update their card to take advantage of this. So it wouldn't leave anyone behind. If they happened to renew in June, they would still get the 2 year or the 6 year upgrade. The fee changes. I have a before and after of where we'd be with the fees from this. The resulting change would be approximately $105,000 increase annually for mechanical inspection. We expect that this six-year renewal, the lack of renewals on the 4 and 6 year period, would cost about $58,000 a year. We would gain about $164,000 in the $300 fee increase. Worker salary for a trainee is approximately half what it is for a journey worker, so this provides more equity in the amount of money spent to get the license. It's also important to consider many trainees are young, and the cost of licensing is a barrier to this career. Most trainees are sought immediately after high school. They don't necessarily have the money to pay $200 per year while they're in training. The proposed fee increase, the reasoning we took was directly from the Bureau of Labor Statistics Consumer Price Index. The modeling for inflation from 2006 to current would estimate that $200 then would equal about $304 today. So we rounded that off to $300 for the increase to cover inflation. That is all I have.
Senator Bishop has a question.
I just have a couple of comments. I'd respectfully like to add another. You had talked about I think Senator Gray Jackson asked the question, why are people leaving and not getting into trades? I can tell you from experience, when the voter initiative passed to make marijuana legal in the state, we saw a direct decrease in the amount of people applying to the apprenticeship program to the one that I used to manage. And federal law is still against the law. And a lot of our trades, men and women, have to work under what's called a covered position under 49 CFR for pipelines, transportation projects. You have to be drug-free. So consequently, you can't, you're going to have to pick one or the other, right? So that is one area there that I'd like to add is to a reason why some people are not applying for the trades. So, but that's their choice. Anyway, other than that, I would like to I just have a comment on the fees. I know a lot of these apprentices that are working out there today are, I don't know about the, I can speak for my trade. You know, they start out at 60% of journeyperson scale and they're working 70 hours a week. I say they can't afford the $200, but just a comment, that's all. But I want to thank you for working with the trades to get to this.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Are there other questions or comments for Mr. Damrow? Seeing and hearing none, at this time, I will open public testimony on Senate Bill 204. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify to Senate Bill 204? Is there anyone online? Seeing and hearing none, I will close public testimony on Senate Bill 204. We'll set this bill. Senator Merrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for the commissioner designee.
Very well.
Thank you, Ms. Munoz, for being here today. I did write a note and received an answer, but I'd like to put this on the record. Do the other crafts need certificates of fitness? And if so, why aren't they included in this bill?
Okay. So thank you for the question, Chairman Bjorkman, Representative. The Department of Labor oversees the training process for electricians and plumbers. And so our purview is over the COF process for those two trades, primary trades.
And follow up?
Senator Merrick.
Do the other crafts need a certificate of fitness as well?
So the department, our certificate of fitness process just impacts the electricians and plumbers in their training process leading up to journeyman. I do not believe that the other trades that are permitted by the Department of Commerce require a journeyman level, but I'll defer to the chief on that question.
That would really be a function of the Department of Commerce. We only oversee those two trades that are in our jurisdiction. Some may or may not have the need for both a trainee and a journey level certificate, but it's plumbers and electricians that we have specific authority over.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll follow up with Commerce.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Other questions? Seeing none, we will set this bill aside for further consideration. We'll take a brief at ease.
Thank you.
back on the record at 206 here in Belts Room 105 of the Thomas Stewart Building. Next up, we have Senate Bill 228, extending the Board of Massage Therapists. My staff, Conrad Jackson, will be presenting this bill. Mr. Jackson, welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Good afternoon. For the record, Conrad Jackson, staff to Senator Bjorkman and the committee. The bill before you, Senate Bill 228, proposes to extend the sunset date of the Board of Massage Therapists by 6 years to 2030. As you, I'm sure, have seen in looking through the audit report, the legislative audit, the folks at legislative audit have performed their audit, have made note of four issues that should be addressed by the department and the board, and I'll just keep that in my comments at this point, with one exception. Some folks have asked me, why are we bothering to do this? We have EO 127 out there, and nobody knows what's going on, and that's really just the point, Mr. Chairman and members. This committee moved EO 127 and the corresponding special Senate concurrent resolution out, and should that EO be disapproved by the legislature, we must have this board extension in place. So, Mr. Chairman, we have Chris Curtis with legislative audit and both the current and the past board president, as well as some other folks available for questions and comments.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson. I'd like to welcome our legislative auditor, Ms. Chris Curtis, to Senate Labor and Commerce today. Ms. Curtis, thank you for joining us.
For the record, my name is Chris Curtis. I'm your state legislative auditor. So we do have a sunset audit in your meeting packets stated August of 2023. And again, the purpose of a sunset audit is to determine whether a board or commission is serving the public's interest and whether it should be extended. So for this board, we determined that they were operating the public's interest by conducting their meetings effectively and by actively amending their regulations to address statutory changes, improve the licensing process, and enhance public safety. We did also conclude that licenses were not consistently issued in accordance with state law. Investigations were not consistently investigated. Cases were not consistently investigated timely. And continuing education audits were not completed. And licensing fees did not cover the cost of regulating the profession. So for this board, we're recommending a six-year extension. That is 2 years less than the eight-year maximum allowed for in statute. That reduced extension recommendation is in light of the audit findings and the need for more timely oversight. Just want to quickly walk you through the report. On page 6, you will find the licensing information. You will see that as of December 2022, the board had 1,157 active licenses and registrants. If you turn to page 9, you'll find the schedule of revenues and expenditures. As of March 2023, the board had a surplus of approximately $36,000. You can also see from Exhibit 3 on page 6 that during the audit period, the board was allocated just over $289,000 of state general funds, and that was to help address the loss of revenues that resulted from the licensing fee freeze that was mandated by the governor to help mitigate the financial impact of the pandemic. So general fund allocations are not expected in the future, and the board is expected to have a deficit as of June 30th of 2023. Now, the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing Management did not recommend a fee increase, and that was based on the department's FY24 proposed budget, which had requested the legislature approve the use of general funds for all investigative costs for occupational boards. And that request was not approved, and DCBPL management stated that they did not have enough time to redo those fee analysis. So this board's deficit is expected to continue in the future. We do have four recommendations. They begin on page 12. First, we recommend the DCBPL director develop procedures to ensure licenses are not approved based on outdated documentation. We reviewed 32 licenses and registrants, and we found three of them were approved based on stale dated documentation. Regulations require that any documents that are older than 6 months must be resubmitted. And this turnover and lack of training resulted in three of those issues not having updated documentation. Second recommendation, we recommend DCCED's commissioner work with policymakers to improve the recruitment and retention of employees, and specifically in Rec 2 investigators. And in Rec 3, we recommend the improvement of recruitment and retention of licensing staff. Those recommendations resulted from our findings related to untimely investigations and continuing education audits not being completed. And then finally, Rec 4, we recommend the board and DCBPL director consider increasing licensing fees. Again, statutes require licensing fees cover the cost of regulating the profession, and this board's fees were not sufficient. Management's response to the audit begins on page 23. The commissioner concurred with the recommendations and the conclusions. The board chair did not provide a response to the audit because at the time we sent the audit over there, there was no board chair.
Thank you, ma'am. Are there questions for Ms. Curtis?
Senator Merrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Curtis, thanks for being here. How many investigations or complaints are filed in this category per year?
We do not, through the chair, Senator Merrick, we do not summarize it by year, but we do summarize the total. A total of 155 cases were open or opened from between FY21 and December 2022.
Which page are you on?
I'm on page 7. So a total of 155 cases were open beginning of the audit period. Doesn't mean they were open during, but they were. That's the total universe that the staff would have worked on.
Thank you.
Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for your presentation. So my question is the schedule of revenues and expenditures, mm-hmm. the personnel services, mm-hmm. what is that for?
Through the chair, I believe that is for the licensing staff and investigators mainly and then any type of purchase of legal assistance would, I believe, come under services line. If a Department of Law were to help, I believe it's coded to services. But the personal services is DCBPL employees.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Other questions for Ms. Curtis? Seeing none, thank you for joining us today. Up next, we have Director of Corporation for Professional Business Licenses, Sylvan Robb. Ms. Robb, welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Sylvan Robb, Director of the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing. Appreciate the opportunity to speak to this. As Ms. Curtis noted, there were four recommendations contained in this audit, one related to outdated documentation. The 30-month period covered by the audit contained a period when the division was really struggling during the pandemic with staffing, and we will readily admit that training was not what it should be. Unfortunately, with many staff positions vacant, supervisors were stepping in to try to get people licensed because obviously absent a license, they're not able to earn a living. We have since really improved on the staffing front, filled a lot of vacancies. We have also done restructuring in an effort to provide better oversight. So we reclassified a number of positions so that the span of control for our supervisors is a much smaller number of our 45 programs so that they can provide that ongoing training as well as do the spot checks that would have caught some of the outdated documentation being allowed to move forward to licensing. The next two recommendations are about recruitment. Again, we've just talked about that to some degree, and indeed even in Ms. Curtis's report, she notes that, you know, this is a statewide issue that may need a statewide solution. We are certainly taking steps internally to try to improve our recruitment. We're in the middle of a classification study for all of our occupational licensing examiners, as well as our records and licensing supervisors. That is 50 personnel within the division. And we are hopeful that when that is concluded, that will make our positions more attractive. So currently, our occupational licensing examiners are just a single job. And so, you know, as you may be familiar with, many state positions are, you know, Accounting Tech 1, Accounting Tech 2, there's a series. And we have quite a variety to our work depending on the type of program. So as you know, about half of our programs have boards, the other half do not. And so that comes with different levels of responsibility, additionally the different oversight. And so we're really hopeful that the class study, recognizing some of those differences in the requirements, will really help make us a more attractive place for folks to work, and as well as laying out a really clear career path for our employees. And then the last recommendation from Ms. Curtis was related to the fee situation. So as she alluded to, last year in the governor's budget, the governor had proposed switching the fund source for investigations to general fund away from licensing fees. Given the late nature of the budget's passage, we didn't have time once we were aware that that proposal would not be accepted to make that transition and implement the fee change. So massage therapists, their licenses renew September 30th of odd numbered years, so that was last year. And we try to get renewal documents online 90 days in advance. And so once we've done that, then we don't want to be changing the licensing fee just because it's unfair as well as confusing for applicants and for staff. So we're certainly keeping a close eye on the fee situation, and we'll be doing a fee analysis and then adjusting their fee as necessary.
Thank you, ma'am. Are there questions for Director Robb? Seeing none, thank you. Next, we'll go to invited testimony. First up, we have Annetta Atwell, Chair of the Board of Massage Therapy. Ms. Atwell, welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify, Senator Bjorkman and committee members. My name is Annetta Atwell, and I am in Fairbanks, and I am currently the Chair of the Massage Board. This board has done a lot of work through the 9 years of existence to improve the status of the massage therapists. This has been an accomplishment through, but not limited to, the establishment of licensing, revisions of regulations, professional input on investigations that concern the scope of practice, development of disciplinary matrices for diverse range of definable negligence or illegal activities. We continue to pursue maintaining a connection with national organizations in the profession of massage therapy, from suggested education hours, allowable continuing education topics, and testing requirements, to engaging with other state boards to learn how they manage difficult issues that arise when disciplinary action, regulation wording to close loopholes, or efficiency topics. Our goal is to continue the training of our board members for safety protocols concerning human trafficking and prostitution rings. This includes being aware of the existence of numerous diploma mills and scams where perpetrators are impersonating massage students to take the national exam. We desire to keep abreast of current information from these organizations when looking at a licensing application from unknown schools. There are addresses that are associated with human trafficking rings, of which we have been made aware, that indicates a no response for an application. It is a great privilege to host our colleagues in a town hall meeting each year so their voice can be heard. The licensees have a lot to offer in helping us understand the needs that arise while practicing. We want to hear their voice. We want to continue keeping our communities safe from unlicensed practices and indicators of businesses that may fall under massage therapy umbrella but do not obtain licenses or establishment licensing. Finally, our licensees can bill insurance companies if they have gone through the vetting process. The Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development issued a letter stating the elimination of our board should not affect these constituents. However, reading the letter further, it is recognized that each insurance company makes their own rules. It is the onus of the licensee to verify that they are still going to be covered. We want to keep that layer of professionalism available to those that are billing insurance companies so that they will not fall prey to a withdrawal of coverage due to the removal of our board. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are there questions for Ms. Atwell? Seeing and hearing none, thank you again. Next up, we have Jill Motz, past board chair. Ms. Motz, please state your name and location for the record and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon. Through the chair, thank you for inviting me to speak today on SB 228. My name is Jill Motz. I'm from Palmer, Alaska. I am the government relations chair for the Alaska chapter of the American Massage Therapy Association, and I'm also the immediate past chair for the State Board of Massage Therapists. I know that this committee has heard some pretty extensive testimony about why this program should continue, so I'll offer a brief insight, and then I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have about the board. I was the member responsible for working with the auditor to complete the legislative audit and have a 7-year history with the board and its function. So I believe that the Board of Massage Therapists serves 5 purposes. First, it ensures public safety. Experienced therapists bring a wealth of knowledge to the table to help keep the public safe. Board members review applications, consult on investigations, review school qualifications, keep up with industry standards, and watch trends that may need to be addressed by regulators. Second, the Board of Massage Therapists, in my opinion, keeps DCBPL honest and focused. In my 7 years with the Board of Massage Therapists, our biggest challenges were often created by or in dealing with DCBPL. Staffing issues, toxic work environments, and a habit of promoting problem employees into supervisory positions translate into poor communication and drop balls by the division. This often left the board in a position where we needed to triple check information coming from rotating staff, bogging our board down in their bureaucratic processes. If proof of such issues needs to be presented, look no further than our recent audit. And you just got a bunch of information regarding that audit. So I think that keeping this board in place and independent of the division will best serve therapists and the public by having professionals on the outside, keeping DCBPL focused on the work at hand. Third, I believe that the board plays an important role in helping combat human trafficking. It's critical to have professionals who have full insight and understanding of the entirety of the practice of massage, watching for key signs of sex and human trafficking. There's no one better suited for safeguarding this issue than the actual people who practice day in and day out. We know where the issues are. We know what to look for. We know the language coding, the paperwork duplicity, and the absolute danger to legitimate therapists when they're put into any sort of connection with sex and human trafficking. Fourth, I'd like to take the opportunity to state that all appointed members of board serve as volunteers. I can't express the amount of time and dedication and passion it requires to serve on a state board. I personally spent weeks away from my family, countless hours doing research, consulting with investigators, preparing for board meetings, all of that to just be an informed participant in my profession. Volunteers save the state and our licensees money. And programs like these allow for oversight of DCBPL to keep our costs low while the legislature holds us accountable with our audits. Finally, I believe this board should be allowed to continue to grow. It was only established in 2015, and we grew this program from the ground up. This is our second legislative audit, and in the last 9 years, we've done phenomenal work. This can be seen in audit findings, but also in the amount of financial and community growth our profession has seen since initial licensing. We can now directly bill insurance. We have a seat at the table for patient care. The profession in general has experienced a substantial average growth in pay for therapists across all all parts of the profession. And we have also increased public safety in an efficient, direct, and responsible way. I respectfully request that you pass the bill out of committee, and thank you for your help in this making this bill possible. I'm available to answer questions if you have any.
Thank you very much, Ms. Motz. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, thanks again. Up next, we have Volker Ruby, past president of the American Massage Therapy Association. Welcome to Senate.
Hello. Thank you. So my name is Volker Ruby, and as a lifelong Alaskan, I have been a licensed massage therapist since 2005. I served 6 years as president of the Alaska chapter of the American Massage Therapy Association, or AMTA, being elected to serve 2 years in a national role. I'm a representative of the AMTA, both Alaska chapter and national. Working in most realms of massage therapy, I have great insight into the profession, and I own a small business in Anchorage where I work as a massage therapist. I am in support of SB 228, continuing the State Board of Massage Therapists. It is crucial for our profession that it continues. The volunteer board is comprised of mostly massage therapists. Continuing the board gives Alaska licensed massage therapists a voice and input in our profession. Massage therapy is a healthcare profession, working with our most vulnerable population. It requires input from professional, experienced massage therapists to work with details relating to scope of practice or professional standards or investigations or regulation changes. The volunteer board has worked hard to minimize any board-related expenses. They've made almost all of their meetings virtual. They've increased efficiency by reducing the turnaround time for approving applications to only 5 days once the board is given the application from the division. In the recent legislative audit that you just heard about, it was recommended that the board continues. Any audit findings were against the division or department. The board has worked hard, and I know we'll continue working hard to improve every aspect of what they do. There is a clear danger to the public if the board is not continued. Experienced massage therapists on the state board are able to identify and anticipate details in applications, complaints, or investigations that help keep illegal elements out of our profession, such as human trafficking. Extending the board of massage therapists helps keep our licensing costs down, increases efficiency, helps protect the profession from illegal entities, and helps make the massage profession in Alaska a profession that I'm proud to be in. I urge you to pass Senate Bill 228 out of committee. Thank you for your time, and I'm available for any questions.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Senator Gray Jackson has a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Volker, for your testimony and also being my constituent. And I heard the previous speaker say that massage therapists can bill insurance. I need a little bit of clarification on that, because I was always under the impression to this day that the only way a massage therapist could bill insurance is under the supervision of a medical professional, also known as a chiropractor. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You know, if it's all right, can I defer that question to Jill Motz? She has even more insight than I do into that. Is that all right?
That's perfectly okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Through the chair. That is not correct anymore. Massage therapists can absolutely bill directly credentialed with insurance companies. Some insurance companies do require that we have a prescription from a doctor or a chiropractor or physical therapist. There are some good higher level providers that sometimes need to provide us with a prescription, but massage therapists do not have to be directly overseen by a higher level professional in order to credential and bill insurance anymore.
Thank you for that clarification. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions from members of the committee? Seeing none, at this time, I will open public testimony on Senate Bill 228. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify? Is there anyone online who would like to testify to Senate Bill 228? Seeing none, I will close public testimony. Is there any further committee discussion on Senate Bill 228? Seeing none, what are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 228, version 33-Lima Sierra 1311/alpha from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Is there any objection? Seeing and hearing none, Senate Bill 228 moves from the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. The Senate Labor and Commerce Committee will meet again on Wednesday, February 28th, when we will hear Senate Bill 121 and Senate Bill 115. As there is no further business to come before the committee today, this meeting is adjourned at 2:32 p.m.